Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
Around the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a mecca for geeks in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Dad, what are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid, plus some new friends. Mike, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent tonight. I've had a little stress in my life recently. Very recently, and I am drinking some Eagle Rare, and I'm going against LT's ban, because this is Kentucky bourbon.
Damn it, Mike, can we stay focused? Tommy, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
Doing okay. I'm just drinking some water tonight, because my stomach's been bothering me the past couple of days. So really? How are you doing, Tommy? What are you drinking?
I'm doing great. I'm drinking Jack Daniel's Old Number 7. I got it on sale, and I got it instead of my Thompson's. And I'm drinking it out of my very special glass that my friend Mike sent me for Christmas. It has my family crest on it, which is beautiful. Stacy. Beautiful Stacy. Yes. What are you drinking?
You know what I'm drinking.
You're drinking water.
Water out of a Frankenstein.
How about you, Josh? How are you doing, and what are you drinking?
I am polishing off a honey from Treehouse, a 7.9% double IPA. It's pretty freaking fantastic, and I'm doing okay. Doing all right. Feeling okay.
It looks terrific. And special guest this week from the very popular podcast, Who's Next Gaming. Seth, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing all right, and I just have some old water, just like Tommy. So
3v3, agua versus alcohol.
That's it.
This is the way the 101 thing rolls.
This is going to how it's breaking it down.
Yeah.
Breaking it straight down the middle. Three alcoholics and three guys with water. Kind of like that movie with the baby.
Yeah. It's almost like an 8-4 ratio.
Yeah.
Unless you reduce your fractions.
And as Mike just alluded to, we are going to be talking about Wonder Woman 84. As everyone remembers, the great Marsden always thought that Wonder Woman's best power was that she was able to submit to the will of others. I will take her lead today, and Mike Manning has decided that he wants to be main voice on this podcast today because he loves this character so very much. Mike, tell us a little bit about Wonder Woman 84 and what we're going to be talking about today.
So today we're going to be talking about Wonder Woman 84. If you have not seen this movie, you should probably pause, go watch it, and then come back because we're going to spoil the shit out of it. Also, if you haven't seen the 2017 Wonder Woman movie, you should probably watch that first because we're also going to be discussing that. It's not fair to talk about a sequel without talking about its original, and I'd like to compare and contrast. Some of you may not be aware that a long time ago I was getting my master's degree in screenwriting. So I pulled out some of my old books to get some terminology right. I broke down the movies, and I got to say, one of them is vastly better than the other, but I will let everybody else come to the reasonable conclusion as well. However, before we get started, let's just do a 3-18. What do you rate Wonder Woman 1984? LT?
Seven.
Ooh, Josh, you got a seven. Okay.
Seven.
Coming out harsh, buddy.
I always rate things just a little higher than Josh, and I think I'm going to go with an eight.
That means you didn't even like it. You know that, right?
No, nine is average.
I don't know.
Yeah, no. So eight
It's an okay movie. It's an okay movie. It's not horrible. It's not like a bad movie. It's definitely not a movie so good. It's so bad. It's good. but it's serviceable, but it's not great by any measure.
All right.
I mean, I put the 7 out in the world, and that's dancing with bad, yeah.
All right, I'm going to give this a pretty solid 11. The popcorn was delicious.
All right. Stacey, what do you got?
You guys are going to laugh at me, but it's fine. For the fun that I had watching it, the moments that made me smile and cheer as a Wonder Woman fan who loves the Linda Carter show, who wore Wonder Woman underoos every day for probably a solid year back in the 80s, who loves the 80s Wonder Woman comics for better or for worse, I'm going to give it a solid 14.
All right. Wow. There was 3 seconds worth of 18 for me. And you know what those 3 seconds were, Stacey, because they were the same 3 seconds for you. Yep. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we're going to have to because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Seth, what do you got for us? 3 to 18.
11.
An 11 also. Wow. All right. Wow. And I am going to join Josh with a 7. And you're talking to a guy who collected all of those comics back in the 1980s because Wonder Woman holds a special place in my heart. So let's first start by talking about the director for both movies was Patty Jenkins. Normally when you talk about a movie, the director is the auteur, and they're the ones who are establishing their vision of what they want. But everything is based upon the script. That's the framework of the movie itself. The Wonder Woman movie was written by Alan Hinesberg, who also wrote Wonder Woman for the comic books. The Wonder Woman 84, or we're just going to call it WW 84 to get the difference between that and the Wonder Woman movie, that was written by Patty Jenkins, Jeff Johns, also a comic book writer, and Dave Callahan. So those three wrote the script, all at different points, I'm assuming. Usually, if it's an ampersand, when they're naming off the writers, then they all wrote it together. But these are commas. So that would imply that one person wrote the script, then another person did a rewrite, and then another person did a rewrite. So with that being said, the way you get to look at a movie is overall there's a theme to every movie, right? So the theme for the Wonder Woman movie was about sacrifice. Everywhere you looked, there was sacrifice from Robin Wright's character sacrificing herself in the beginning to save Wonder Woman, from Wonder Woman sacrificing her homeland and everyone she knows and loves in order to go into the world of man, and to Steve Trevor sacrificing his life to save hundreds of thousands of other people and to save the armistice, the peace that they were trying to preserve and that Ares was trying to stop. So that was all a movie about sacrifice. What do you guys think? And I'm being honest. I think I know what the theme of the 84 movie is, but I'm interested in what you guys think the theme was.
Well, raked raw and I think thrown in our face was the value of truth, right? It was pretty much the continued repetition of that throughout the film, even just through character dialogue was what I thought they were going for. I don't know, considering my rating, I don't know if they did a good job striking home with that theme, but I think that's what they were trying for.
And I would say, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm curious as to what you guys think.
I was going to say another theme I would say that's part of it, I would say is probably that it's not too late to make the right decision. I think that was kind of inherent in a lot of things, whether it was about renouncing your wish. And even the villain of this movie gets to make the right decision and kind of come back around, which I actually appreciate. I think it's one of the things that bumps this movie up a bit, because I think many times the solution is beat the bad guy and kill him. And it was kind of interesting to see a more peaceful resolution to the end of this, where even the villain, there's a bit of humanity to him with his son, and we actually get to see that kind of come around where he realizes the error of his ways. And so, yeah, I think that might be another theme throughout.
Well, I think the real theme was to thine own self be true, because that's when characters actually start flourishing. Diana had been lying to herself, allowing herself to be with Steve. Steve was lying to himself, allowing himself to even be alive. Felix Faust, I'm going to call him Felix Faust because that's what I want to call him, goddammit, because that's who he should have been, was lying to himself, and he should have just stayed and been a better dad to his father. And, of course, the scientist who became the cheetah should have stayed true to her own self and been the good, happy, humorous, fun, loving person instead of the sexy bad girl that she became, one of the most terrible tropes. So to me, to thine own self be true was the obvious theme of this.
Okay, what about you, LT? What did you think the theme was?
So, you know, in addition to like all the things that you've been saying, to bring it down to a more base level, also there's also this theme of like there is no free lunch. Like, even though you've got this wishing stone, there's always a cost to whatever you're doing. You know, you still have to give up something in order to get whatever you want. You know, was one of the basest things in the movie. You know, so even the guy who wanted a cup of coffee still had something that he had to give up.
It was hot. It was too hot.
Yeah.
He wanted free coffee, and he would say he got it. He's like, ooh, hot. Ooh, hot. He got the coffee, but burned the roof of his mouth. Small wishes, small consequences.
Yep.
Stacey, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with what everybody else has said. I think part of it, too, is be careful what you wish for. Because you might get something, you might say something, and the wish you get is a literal interpretation of that, which is not great. I think that's what we saw with Barbara. The other is be careful what you wish for, because you're getting what you want, but it adversely impacts other people. One of the things I think they did really well, and maybe this is just because literally the day before we watched it, we just finished the Hulu documentary about Reagan. And so being in the mindset of the greed of the 80s and then watching this movie, it was like, man, the 80s were awesome, but they kind of sucked in terms of the way people acted.
Right, and that's actually a great point. I think what's interesting, though, is we all watch the same movie, yet we're walking away with slightly different variations of what we think the theme is, which to me indicates that there's something a little off about how the story structure was set up, because it's not readily apparent, although we're all along the same vein, though, right? So it's close. It's just not grabbing you. Like, did anybody have a different theme for the first Wonder Woman movie? I know I'm asking you about a movie that you probably watched a few times since 2017, but other than Sacrifice?
It was pretty obviously about Sacrifice to me. The underlying one was also War as Hell, but that's the ones that pop out.
So what we've had is we've talked about envy, we've talked about greed, we've talked about truth. Well, that's all the basic same theme, is that, you know, you got to be careful what you wish for, et cetera. Greed is bad, envy is bad, et cetera. So I get that that's the theme of the movie. Then you purposely choose a setting. If it's not set in modern times, there has to be a reason. And the reason you set a movie in a different time period is because that time period itself is a character. So a great example of that is the Luke Cage, right? It's set in Harlem, even though it's in modern times, but Harlem and the music scene actually becomes a character in that. in the first Wonder Woman movie, it's set in World War One, because World War One, the trench warfare, really depicts the horror that is war, especially with the mustard gas, etc. It's a great setting for a movie about war, especially because it was the first World War, and it was the supposed to be the war to end all wars. And as Stacy just pointed out, there's a good reason for setting a movie about greed and envy and, you know, trying to get all you want without worrying about the consequences is set in the 1980s. So, again, I understand the setting for the 1980s. Now, whether that's effective or not as a character, we could have that discussion, and I'm sure we're going to dissect that later on. But, again, it makes sense the way that the filmmakers were going, why it's set in that direction. So now that we've got that, the way most structures of movies start is you have to have the hook. It's something that's going to grab the viewer's attention, and within a few minutes, it lets the viewer know what the movie is about. In Wonder Woman, it's the scene where the truck delivers the package from Wayne Industries to Diana, and Diana starts looking at it, and it's setting up the flashback to World War One. So it gives you the idea that the hook is this is going to be an origin story. The hook in this movie is a little different, and that is the American Ninja Games of Themyscira. In 1984, what did you guys think of the opening scene?
Besides them having used the, I believe it was called, what was that thing at Holyoke Mountain? Where you could ride the thing down?
Oh, the slide, yeah.
The slalom?
Oh,
the Alpine slide.
Yeah.
The Alpine slide at Holyoke Mountain. Besides the Alpine slide at Holyoke Mountain being used as a prop, it's not a good opening for me.
I love the opening scene set in Hogwarts playing Quidditch. I thought that was a lot of fun. Well, that's not what that was.
But so the reason the filmmaker sets it in Themyscira is because somebody might not have seen the first movie, and you get established Wonder Woman is an Amazon, and they have amazing abilities, etc. I think that's the understanding. That first opening scene is 11 minutes long. That's a long time for a story hook. So but
just a one functional thing about that. What if you fire the arrow and you hit the other person's flare? It just seems like a really inefficient way to track progress. And now I'm gonna get off that, but. Let me just throw that out there because it really fucking drove me nuts.
It's easy. It's a simple question. It's a simple answer.
Nuts.
What were they competing for?
Pride?
Who was worthy of that? Something like that, right? Wasn't it for like some kind of title or some shit?
Yeah, it's a one-year-long title. The best in the business.
The best in business. I believe that's what it was. And I believe, Tom, there was at least a small trophy to go with that title. Best in business.
They were the champions, right? Yeah. It was a contest of champions.
Best in the business, mother trucker.
I didn't know if it was one section of Themyscira gets food for the year or not. I didn't know what the whole point of the competition was. And here's where I think the first mistake is. They have a whole backstory about this Amazon who saves the planet or whatever, right? Or saves all the Amazons from mankind by having this awesome armor, etc. You already had a movie that set up that the Amazons have a mother box. So the award could have been the prestige of guarding the mother box. It doesn't.
Man, I think you're projecting what you want into this movie.
No, I'm just making a suggestion because it would tie in to the other movie and show that the Amazons who are protecting it. I'm just trying to find a reason for the scene other than
something that makes it relevant. Well, fundamentally, the reason for the scene is to show that is to establish that in that moment, Diana was being very immature and wanted to win, but she didn't win the right way, the truthful way. And that, you know, she continues to make that mistake into the movie. I mean, that fundamentally, story-wise, that's why they did it. Now, why they were doing that competition other than the honor of being photographed for their Instagram in front of that statue, I don't know. I thought it was a beautiful scene. I get where the criticism is coming from, though.
I mean, 64 years later, she makes the same mistake. That's all.
There's no shortcuts, Mike.
That's true.
There's no shortcuts.
So
there's no easy way home.
So
yeah,
now
the Alpine slide is worth the money.
So the next thing you want to do is
you have to find a.
Go ahead, Seth.
A short. I said you can't use a sex robot. You got to find a real woman. No shortcuts.
I'm not sure I agree, but let's keep going.
That's the lesson.
There's a whole nation called Japan that will disagree with you. For you angry Japanese listeners, send your angry tweets to @thelongboxguys.
Yeah.
So the inciting incident is the thing that sets up the story in motion. And it doesn't have to be the first thing that happens, but it's in the first act, because usually there are three acts to a movie. If you break down, the first act is the first 25% of the movie. Second act is the next 50%, and the third act is the last 25% of the movie. So the inciting incident in Wonder Woman is Steve Trevor arrives at Themyscira, and that sets off the whole event, right? What's the inciting event that sets off everything in motion for Wonder Woman 84?
That weird robbery?
The heist
for underground 80s ancient archaeological stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's her wish.
I agree with them.
Yeah, they get the stone that way through that shenanigans of that and Wonder Woman saving it. And then that's kind of what ends up rolling the ball there. I mean, you could technically say probably the first wish, too, which did Wonder Woman audibly wish?
No.
Because she was the one who technically made the first wish, right?
No.
Coffee guy.
Okay.
Guy wishes for coffee.
And causes the destruction of civilization.
Yeah. And he does get his fucking the roof of his mouth burned. He got what he deserved.
So
instant karma.
So, Seth, what you're talking about is the key incident. We'll go back to that, because sometimes the inciting incident and the key incident are the same thing or they're different things. But what starts the action flowing for the movie is the heist. Now, I thought this was a horrible scene, right? I wasn't impressed with any of the action. Apparently Wonder Woman instinctively knows where everything bad thing is happening in the city and is moving so fast that nobody ever sees her. And video cameras only record up until they're broken, or everything that was happening before gets broken. Like it's
in 1984's defense, video cameras were pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Shitty 80s.
That's true.
Most of those were probably fake cameras.
But the whole reason they go to the mall for this whole scene is because it's the 1980s and people went to the malls in the 1980s, right?
True.
It's true.
Yeah.
There was no other thing.
Go
ahead.
I liked the setting being in the mall, but I have to say the whole Wonder Woman knowing where crime is happening, when I saw Geoff Johns' name on the front of the movie and then saw that scene, I was like, that's got Geoff Johns written all over it. And I don't know if it does. I there's no way to know that, maybe, but I was like, that just seems
like Geoff Johns. He was jerking off to Stranger Things and was like, have I got an idea for Wonder Woman?
I'm just saying.
It just felt like something that was out of an episode that he was involved with on Smallville or something like that. Like it just, it felt very like early 2000s Outsiders comics that he was writing.
Yeah, you filmed a scene supposedly set in the 80s in a superhero movie in a mall, and you made zero callbacks to Mallrats. I don't even know what's wrong with you people.
Hey, you know what? If instead of that little girl that she saved, it was a little Lex Luthor, it would have made a lot more sense for future movies because Lex Luthor would be like, I've been fucking saying for years this broad exists.
How does Wonder Woman find crime?
You got rid of the video cameras, but there's like a million eyewitnesses.
What were you saying, Seth, before LT interrupted with his inane comment?
How does Wonder Woman find crime in the comics? Does she fight crime like this in the comics, or is she typically doing things in her land elsewhere? I'm not familiar with Wonder Woman's comics.
Wonder Woman doesn't bounce around the city doing patrols like Batman.
Yeah.
Typically, shit comes to her.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the iteration of Wonder Woman, too. Like, some of my favorite stuff, was the Greg Rucka stuff where she was a diplomat and, shit did come to her. But yeah, she's not like Batman. She doesn't have a crime computer that's like, oh no, somebody sends out the golden lasso symbol and she has to fly to the crime.
Yeah. So the next is the key incident. Like I said, this is what the story is about. And in Wonder Woman, it's when Robin Wright's character sacrifices herself on the beach to save Wonder Woman. So it's that tells you, right, that's the theme. It's all about sacrifice, and this is the first sacrifice. It's the key incident in the first act. In this movie, the key incident, I think, is Diana making her wish. Unless you get, do you guys think it's something else that would be the key incident?
I put that out there.
Okay. Did anybody else have a problem with the fact that Wonder Woman befriends Barbara Minerva, not because she's a nice person, but because she wants to get close to her to find out more about the artifacts?
Hey, Mike, people can have more than one motivation.
Mm-hmm. Well,
why else would you be friends with somebody? To use them, get what you want out of them, and then you're done with it. Isn't that what friendship's all about?
Personally, I only befriended Mike and Tom here because Mike was a great DM and he had the biggest piece of citrine I had ever seen.
Speak your truth. There it is.
And I was his sidekick? What?
You
wish you were my sidekick. My God.
Let's just talk about one of the craziest reoccurring tropes in all of comic books, and that's the nerdy nebbish sidekick gaining powers and turning on the superhero. It happens all the time. It's tried and true. From Lex Luthor to everybody. Fuck everybody. As a sidekick like that, and as a nemesis like that. I kind of harken this back to something that Mike said early on. Wonder Woman once told Batman, you know why I don't have a rogues gallery? None of them are alive. Except for this character. Cheetah remains alive, one of her few reoccurring rogues, because they were friends. So I don't think it's weird that she opened that door crack to become friends with her after she had led such a closed-off life. Diana's life has been closed off because she's living this double life, and she hasn't let a lot of friends in after the death of Steve Trevor. But now she has, and once she opened that door crack, she did become friends, I think, with Minerva.
So what is the purpose? What's the purpose for Barbara and Minerva in this tale of greed? I guess she's an example of greed, right? Because her envy of Wonder Woman?
More envy than greed, yeah.
Well, she's a product of not being truthful to herself. She's trying to be somebody she's not, somebody she's always wanted to be. And, I know it's a trope, but I've also known people like that in real life, like people who were very awkward at some point in their lives, whether it was middle school or high school or whatever, and then they get rich, they get popular, they get better looking, whatever, and maybe they don't turn into a feral human cheetah hybrid, but they do become the thing that they purported to hate their whole lives. And I think that's why I don't necessarily have a problem with that trope most of the time. And I think they do it successfully in this movie.
I think they mostly do become feral cheetah hybrids.
Most.
I mean,
that's fair.
Fair percentage of the time.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
squirrel hybrids like Mitch McConnell.
But on the other hand, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be a better person, right?
But she didn't want to be a better person. She wanted to have some nebulous better station in life for no reason other than...
That people don't remember who she is, even the person who hires her. She's got a shitty life. I don't blame her for...
She does. Yeah. I'm not saying she shouldn't strive for wanting to be noticed. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying... She didn't necessarily want, once she got a little bit of that, she didn't stop there. She was like,
she didn't want to be a better person. She wanted to be better than other people. There's a difference.
Yeah. Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah. Once she got a little bit of it, she decided that she wanted to lose her humanity completely. She wanted to be an apex predator. She wanted to be the thing that she had been preyed upon by her whole life.
I think if she would have just got the advice or watched maybe down the road when it came out, Not Another Teen Movie, and seen the joke that, you know, if you just take your glasses off, you're actually super hot now.
Yeah.
And, like, that's to fix everything.
That's so, Tom. Like,
all she, everything. Yeah.
All Tom, take your glasses off.
Take your glasses off.
Take your glasses off. And
Holy shit.
On your OnlyFans page? I'm in.
Oh my god.
Just slow motion
clean
glasses.
Up aisle five.
Oh wait, Tom's gross again. Oh shit. Look at that.
Tom who? I don't see anybody there.
Oh my god, I just lost my Woody.
Bruce Wayne.
Damn it.
That's how Superman does it. Now it makes sense.
Yeah, damn Skippy. And I never believed in that trope until I saw Zooey Deschanel really well dressed up, and me and Josh could not tell who that fucking person was. God damn it, Zooey Deschanel.
For the record, though, Clark Kent is way hotter than Superman.
And, well, there you go. The glasses make it.
And for the record, the only reason the cheetah's in the movie is so Wonder Woman has somebody to beat up.
It's true. That's actually what I said.
Yeah.
We just need a fight scene.
Yeah. The friendship doesn't, I mean, they have lunch, and we should probably talk about the Dreamstone, right? The monkey's paw, whatever you want to call it. The magical device that works however you fucking feel like it works. That's the other thing. When you have something that's magical or out of the world, you have to establish to the audience, how does this work? Right? So that way they can, like, we've all seen the Harry Potter movies. We can accept that magic works. You just have to kind of explain how it works. I mean, none of us are watching a Superman movie going, that's bullshit. That's not how someone flies. That can't be possible. Just because he's an alien doesn't mean gravity doesn't work. No, we're like, okay, great. He's from another planet. He fucking flies. Okay, great. Move on. But with this movie, it starts off one way, but then seems to kind of change how it works. In the typical Monkey's Paw, which is a short story, the wearer gets their wish, but something bad happens in return. But that's not what's happening here so much as something's taken from them. Something, apparently, at one point, it's whatever they hold true or dear, which doesn't make any sense because I don't believe Wonder Woman's powers define who she is. But I could be wrong on that. And Barbara Minerva's greed or envy causes her to lose her humanity. But then later on, when Max Lord gets a hold of it and then becomes the Dreamstone himself.
So here's the, I think here's the rub, Mike, and that you're, what you're rolling towards here is I think the theme is that when he becomes the stone, he gets to decide what he takes. Where the stone, as an animate, was taking people's wishes, and in the conjunction was taking whatever they held most dear. So we see Diane loses her powers, she loses her humanity, Guy apparently loved the roof of his mouth. Like, we well, all you, just...
Well, you didn't see his off-screen, his wife kills his dog.
All right, we don't see that. God damn it.
Cut anyway, for time.
Because we all wanted to see that.
Well, we know one person who wanted to see it. Magic said
I think the unspoken, unexplained, never really sort of followed through part of it is that as when he becomes the stone, he decides what he takes from people. Now, don't get me wrong. If, and Mike, you have often stated in many movies that we have watched over the past that exposition can be the enemy. In this case, a little exposition would have gone a long way in forming our villain into something fully functional.
Well, see, that's the weird thing. They did have exposition character, right? That one dude who shows up just to explain that the stone is bad.
But then he doesn't explain it.
But yeah, that's the fucking problem, right? You introduce a guy whose only job is to give you exposition, and he doesn't fucking give you any. Like, dude, there's a book.
That shit happens.
You guys all should read this fucking book if you want to know what the fuck is going on, because I'm not going to explain it.
The best ice cream.
Listen, he was just following the format of reading Rainbow. He got them halfway there, and he was like, but don't take my word for it.
That's true. As a side note, there are still 350,000 Mayans living in the Yucatan Peninsula, whose first language is still Mayan, and they don't learn Spanish until they're in higher grades. I just want to say his civilization has not been wiped off the map. They're still there, and you can visit.
I've met a bunch of them.
I met three.
So
three. I don't want to meet another. I'm good.
So let's move on to the first plot point, which this is the moment that changes everything. The main character reacts in a strong and irrevocable way. So in the Wonder Woman movie, Diana leaves Themyscira for the world of man, knowing she will never be allowed to go back to her homeland because her whole mythos, her whole ethos is, my job is to save mankind from Ares, the god of war. What is the first plot point in this movie where something that Diana does changes everything? Is it the wish?
It's the secret wish, yeah.
Or is it Steve Trevor coming back?
Yeah, it's the wish.
Well, it can't be Steve Trevor. She needs agency for that, right?
Yeah.
That's not... Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to figure out what's the first plot point.
There is agency of stop raping that guy and give him his body and his mind back.
Okay, let's
now we're coming in with the rape.
Somebody opening the door.
Coming in hot.
All right,
we're not gonna sugarcoat it. We're not gonna call it romancing the stone. We're gonna come in hard.
All right. Everybody
citrine, you should romance something.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that guy did not want to romance Gal Gadot.
Let's get into that. Yeah. Everybody at home, put your seatbelt on because we're about to take a quantum leap into rape.
I mean,
all right. So Seth, okay. Go ahead, explain your point.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So apparently Steve Trevor does not just come back. He takes over someone's body who everybody else sees the victim. We and Wonder Woman see Steve Trevor, and that's all that matters. So if we don't see it, it's not real. Just like Tom, if you take your glasses off, it's just not real. You don't see it, so it's fine.
So
that's all. I
Maybe the real theme of this movie is you don't need fucking glasses, because then you can be beautiful like Cheetah, or you don't have to see the horrible things that you're doing. So just take your glasses off.
So I 100% agree. So Mike and I have had this. I think some of this conversation already percolated up before this podcast. And I got to say, there's a lot of rapiness going on in this whole thing. And the worst part about it for me is there's no reason for it. It was a fucking magical wish. Just have the guy come back. What is the point of what they did? And it never susses out. It's terrible. It's terrible.
The point is, they had to be doing something bad for her to renege her wish.
But that's not why she reneges her wish. She reneges her wish to get her powers back, so she can save the world. She never says, "Oh, maybe I should stop, you know, freaking molesting this poor bastard and renege my wish." That never comes up.
She says she don't see him. Remember, she only
sees
Trevor.
I don't even see him.
So as long as you don't see it. It's not wrong.
I don't see them as people, Mike. And if I don't see them as people, it's not rape.
It's not.
What point is that?
Stacey, you're a fan of this movie, so please defend the rape.
Yeah. No. I'm not going to defend it. I will say.
That's why it was a 14 for Stacey. Otherwise, it would have been an 11 if it wasn't for the rape.
Stacey is pro-man rape.
This movie cranked up to a 14 for me, so I'm right there.
Turnabout is fair play. No, I'm joking. Please don't take that seriously. So that is the one. So in the first movie, it was a great movie up until the fight with Ares, because the CGI was so horrible and we didn't need to see his face. And I have a whole litany of problems with that. So it's like, that was an almost perfect movie that was marred by one thing. I'm not going to say this is an almost perfect movie. This is an almost perfect cheesy 80s comic or Supergirl level kind of not great superhero movie that's still kind of fun. The more I sat with the whole Steve Trevor plotline, the more problems I had with it. Because honestly, first time through, I didn't really think about it that way until the very end of the movie when we see the guy. And I was like, oh, shit. Like,
he's been roofing for 2 days.
Yeah, I felt bad because I was like, I usually pick up on stuff like that. And I guess I was just like blinded by like, yay, Wonder Woman. That is the thing that does not sit well with me in this movie, because like we've said, it was fucking magic. We didn't need it. And then I don't know if any of you guys have seen Patty Jenkins' justification for it. that was basically like, well, look at the 80s movies like Big, and you're like, yeah, that was problematic too, because a child had sex with an adult. Yes, he was in Tom Hanks' body, and who doesn't want to have sex with Tom Hanks, especially 80s Tom Hanks, but not when he's got the consciousness of a child. Like, that doesn't make it okay. So, that is the one. That is a big, big, big thing that I have a problem with in this movie, and a thing that will make me not probably watch it a whole bunch of times, because it's cringy and there's no reason for it.
I will say, she did compliment the guy on his outfit at the end of the movie. All is forgiven.
Oh, that makes it okay. Oh, then.
That makes it okay.
So
yeah, he was dressed. He was asking for it.
Not
the way he was dressed.
See the end of the movie. He had that scarf on. He had that crazy outfit, and she
was
like,
"You look
fucking, you look fucking great." And he was like, "Thank you. All is forgiven. He's cool with it. If you take your glasses off, you'll be cool with it. Just don't look." Okay.
I mean, dramatic irony is really great. It's a really great device. It's not great when the dramatic irony is that you know he's been raped and he doesn't.
And I like that they end cap it with a Hallmark movie-esque moment.
Exactly.
Where you're like, are these guys going to actually do it again? No, because the dude's gay. We can all agree she raped a gay dude who has a pirate fucking outfit, right?
Back to the 80s.
So what was the point in Steve Trevor being there? I think we can all agree
that the movie makers wanted to do the reverse of what they did in the first movie, where Diana was the woman, the fish out of water, now, and Steve was showing her around. Now Steve's the fish out of water, where Diana had to try on all these different dresses in order to look like she belonged there. Now Steve has to try on all these ridiculous 80s outfits in a montage scene. I understand, but the whole problem, one of the main problems we all have, is that there was no fucking reason to possess this guy's body. None whatsoever. It's such a simple fix that anybody could have just said, no, that's a horrible idea. And then you shoot two different scenes where he's like, hey, I just fucking appeared, you know, and you're good to go. Right, that solves that whole problem. But here's
the. You didn't even need to show it. It's magic. You just could have had the freaking some montage of freaking shopping in stores and being done with it. Like, there's no reason.
Or he appears in a plane, or without a plane, in the middle of over Europe, and is falling to his death. I would have fucking loved that.
Yeah.
But there was. Let's go back to the original movie. The whole movie was based on the premise of sacrifice. If a character's death doesn't mean anything, the sacrifice is hollow. Bringing Steve Trevor back shits on the whole theme of the first movie. He sacrificed himself in order to help everybody else, to do the right thing. And then they bring him back. That's my first, well, not my first, but it's one of the problems I have with it.
Mike, it changes the first movie, because it says in the first movie, Steve Trevor was too dumb to save himself by taking his belt and using it to affix it to the yoke of the plane and jumping out and have Diana save him. He was too stupid then, and now in this new movie, he's going to appear even more stupid.
Right. You're barely smart enough to know what a yoke is. Shut up.
What do you got, Josh?
That's what it says.
I'll agree and disagree, right? Because it's not the sacrifice. The undoing of his sacrifice wasn't his choice.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I was going to say basically – the same. I don't think it undoes or ruins the first movie, because the point of it is that he has to stay that way. He has to go back. Like, it's not. It was a callback to the opening sequence of this 84 movie, that you can't cut corners to get what you want. You know, like, that's the cost of that, and that's what it is. Like, he died. So I don't think it ruins that. I think honestly, all they had to do was either A, the simple thing, and bring him back without possessing somebody, or B, better movie, he comes back as an actual plane. So instead of just...
he comes back as a plane?
Yeah. An invisible jet?
Invisible jet.
He comes back as an invisible plane, and it's actually Steve Trevor. And talks to Wonder Woman in a robot voice inside the plane.
I'm totally.
That would be a better plan.
If they fucking Knight Rider that whole thing, I am in. I am totally in. God damn it, Seth, I am buying this book.
Thank you.
I am fucking in on that. That would have been amazing.
I wish I wasn't, but I'm in.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I don't think it took away from the sacrifice so much as it really drives the point home that Diana thinks that she can save everybody. She thinks that she can have her cake and eat it too. And that's part of the big lesson. And I don't have a problem with Steve Trevor being back. I just have a problem with the way they brought him back, in terms of like having the whole like quantum leap thing. Like, that's just not,
oh boy.
It was unnecessary. Okay. And I there's a few other things I have slight problems with the whole Steve Trevor thing, like him having to explain flying to her so that she can come back to that later. Like, I love the flying sequences. I love what they did with it. I just don't know that I needed Steve to mansplain flying to her.
Well, I mean,
how much better would it have been if Steve Trevor was an actual plane and explained to her how to fly?
Yeah, planesplaining? Sure, planesplaining all day long. Fucking plane.
Josh, you're the only pilot here. I assume you can fly every plane ever made, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And to be sent into the future, no problem, right?
Right.
No problem. The other thing was, I believe the plane they crawled into is an F-4 Phantom E, and they never made a side-by-side trainer for the F-4 Phantom. So, small technical detail there. Not really a thing. But...
Yeah, but we're also
climb into a stealth bomber.
Because the Smithsonian didn't have one all fueled up on their airfield. Haven't you been to the Smithsonian airfield?
Right on the frickin'...
Where they have everything ready to go at a moment's notice. Those two air traffic controllers are like, oh, wait, we finally get to do our job. What's happening? Ah. All right.
That museum is not at an airfield. It's in downtown D.C.
Another technical difficulty, I think, is, and maybe you can correct me about this, but I don't think a cheetah is supposedly considered an apex predator.
No.
Probably not.
So her whole point of being...
She should have been a fucking orca. Or, you know what's the apex predator?
A different jacket, Mike.
No, yeah. An apex... Do you know what the apex predator is? Humans.
She was already that.
Shark!
Yeah.
Shark. I mean,
while we're on technical terms.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, let's go back to Steve Trevor. They even have a callback to when Wonder Woman saves Steve Trevor in the Wonder Woman movie, where she uses her bracelet, which is right out of the Superman movie, where he saves Lois Lane. In this movie, Steve Trevor is able to use a serving tray to stop a bullet. Wow, the White House has really good fucking serving trays. That's all I have to say about that. But let's go to a bigger point about Steve Trevor. Again, he tells her that he's been gone, but he feels like it was a good place.
So she snatched him out of heaven to...
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been better for you guys is if he was... in hell being tortured by Diana's uncle Hades because he was involved in killing his nephew. The whole plot of the movie could have been Diana trying to rescue Steve from hell.
Dark, dude.
Yeah, yeah, really fucking dark. And
that would have been better.
A great movie, right?
It wouldn't have been any darker than some Wonder Woman comics.
Jeez, I don't want someone. Yeah, but yeah.
Seth, what do you think?
It gives more justification for taking over somebody's body and having to the dilemma of sending him back or not. That would is more weight to those stakes.
Josh,
yeah, absolutely. Like that. I mean, even just that. You know, Mike, I appreciate your insights to all this stuff, and yeah, the tortured soul thing would have been a nice turn for this,
and a much harder sacrifice at the end. Because she knows she's sending him back to hell.
She's like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, he gets to go back to heaven? What the fuck? I'll see him when I get there. Like, it's fucking life after death bullshit. And the other thing that would have been nice right there, and I'm just going to mention this. If you guys haven't played the game Hades online right now, if you're like a Diablo fan, man, that's a fun game. Get in there. The dialogue's great. The gameplay's amazing. Go play Hades. Like, if you're a gamer, man, right now, go play Hades. I should have saved that for plugs, but I couldn't. It just tied in so well.
So I will afterwards on our Patreon podcast, I will tell you, speaking of Patreon, we have another podcast called The Geek Leak. You can check us out at patreon.com/TheLongBoxGuys for a mere $1 a month. You get an extra podcast. Every week we decide to do a podcast, which is usually about 48 times a year. And all the money that we get from that goes to the Elizabeth Peabody House, where our good friend Tom runs the food bank over there. So you are helping out people who need help in these bad times. So be a Wonder Woman or a Wonder Man and go over and do good by donating to us, which we in turn donate to the Elizabeth Peabody House.
Well said, sir.
That's a free plug there, but I will tell everybody my cat is – sorry. My cat is very pissed about this Wonder Woman movie. We'll
it's time to feed the cat. I know what that sound is.
Cat's an apex predator.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a cheetah, so I'm not afraid. All right, let's move on from Steve Trevor. But I will say on that Patreon-only podcast, I will lay out next week how they could have made Steve Trevor's possession of the body so much better in the Wonder Woman 84 movie.
And next week on the podcast that we're calling, Mike is smarter than you.
No, Mike is smarter than Patty Jenkins, Jeff Johns, and Dave Callahan. So let's
That's
go.
What I'm saying. Mike is smarter than you. I was actually talking.
Handwritten note incoming.
All right, so there's things called pinch points. We're not even going to get into those because we've been running long anyways. Let's just get to the second half of the second act. And this is where the plot of the movie really starts popping. Things are happening. In the Wonder Woman movie, it is the best scene of any DC movie. It is No Man's Land.
That's a great scene. Yeah.
All right, that is the phenomenal scene, and it is about at the halfway point in the middle of the second act, and boom, that's where you got it. And it gets the whole – everybody watching all pumped up, right? Yeah, we are behind this. What is that scene in 84?
Yeah, there's one.
I've got a guess as to what it might be. But I'm not sure.
I mean, just the music in the scene when she pops up out of the trench.
Maybe when she gets wounded. Fire.
Yeah, it may be that.
Tucks and rolls with those kids.
Yeah, I think it might be the chase scene. But I mean, it's straight out of an Indiana Jones movie, is what the feel of it is almost like. Where he's chasing Nazis. Things. And I get the whole thing, but other than having to go film on an exotic set, I don't really know what the purpose of them having to chase him all the way to Cairo and fail to stop him and then have to go all the way back to the U.S. other than we got to have a scene in here.
The point is they have a plane, Mike. We have a plane now so we can do this.
So we can have an invisible plane, so we got to go somewhere. Okay.
You can't have them explain and not go somewhere.
Yeah, you're a monster.
We get to fly through fireworks.
I mean, plane is really fuel efficient, Mike. We got to tout that.
Josh, you're a pilot. When you see fireworks, you want to fly into them, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, you can wait to.
safest thing you can do.
Safest place you can be.
Fireworks, flak, and flights of geese. Those are the three best things to fly into.
Hurricanes.
Hailstorms.
Yeah, all right.
Mushroom clouds.
Oh, so good. Oh,
yeah. So exciting from the air.
Got to get a better look.
All right. So then.
Yeah, that seemed a little, I don't know, that was cheesy and not in a good way.
It was pretty, though. And I bet if we were at an IMAX theater in 3D, it would have looked great. I mean, that's what it was for, guys.
It was.
It was for the IMAX 3D experience. They like, hey, we're going to throw something in. We don't know COVID's coming. Boop, doop, doop, film it.
Well, and I don't know if this is the right place to talk about this, but sure. That was a conversation that I had with a friend, which was the shared experience of watching a movie like this in a theater. And, you know, watching it at home on HBO Max, we watched it with a couple other people. And I think that's what drove the number up for me. I feel like if I watched this movie again by myself, I would probably be like, yeah, this is not great. Like, this is not what I wanted. But, you know, I remember watching the first one in the theater. I watched it three times, I think. And every time, luckily, like in a row with me or around me, there was either a little girl or a mom, or, you know, a grandma who was, you know, we would kind of, like, if it was in the same row as me, like, I would catch, you know, catch a lady's eye, and we'd both be like, yeah, like, this is amazing. You know, not having that made it more of a hollow experience, I think. And I think that's why scenes like the whole fireworks thing, as cheesy as it was in the theater, probably would have been like, wow, pretty colors. But at home, it's like, nah.
All right, well, let's move on to the third act. And this is where it opens with a bang and it never lets up. The plot just keeps on plowing forward. And in an action movie, this is the action starts, and it is not going to stop until it reaches its climax. It just continually builds. In the Wonder Woman movie, it's actually when she kills Lindendorf, and the war doesn't stop, right? This totally breaks her whole world point of view at this point. I'm sorry, my dog is having trouble breathing, if you can hear that. Aww. She's very old. So can you guys tell me what the opening of the third act is in the Wonder Woman 84?
Oh, when she goes against the armor. Not to put too fine a point on it, but I mean, that's pretty certainly the very beginning of it, and then she goes to the island to confront the main bad guy.
So the armor is just there to look good and to show what a badass cheetah is? Is that apparently what it is? And to set up the post-credit scene?
I think it's a little bit to set up the post-credit scene. It really doesn't serve a lot of purpose because it's not that goddamn effective. Cheetah goes through that thing like the Flash goes through Kleenex. I mean, just...
Well, I think to differ. And I think Stacey could probably agree with me. I think that armor is there to sell more toys.
I was just, I don't know if you saw me reaching, but yeah, I was like, yeah, they got me.
They got me on this one.
I bought it months ago. So, but it's still pretty. I still like it. But yeah.
Pretty that is?
It was very toyetic, and that was,
did you say toyetic?
I did say toyetic.
What does that word mean? That is a beautiful word.
It means kind of what it sounds like. Like
poetic and toy.
It's something that, yeah, something that is, you know, translates well to toys.
Very good on you. I love that word. Favorite word.
Okay, I totally accept that as a reason for it to sell more toys. Got it. So
right, then cross the cross. Like screen.
Yeah, that's the hungry cat. For those of you who are watching on YouTube, hold on a second. I will show you. This is Tinker Monster, my dog, who's 12 years old and is having problems breathing. But she's a sweet girl. She doesn't mean to interrupt our podcast, unlike the cat, who's just a bastard. So the third act builds to the climax, which is where everyone is on the edge of their seat. The general idea is you should have a general idea of what's coming because of foreshadowing, but you might not know exactly what's coming. And the protagonist suffers from doubt. And in this, it's Wonder Woman beating Ares and becoming the God Killer and finally believing in herself. In 84, what is the climax?
Isn't it the moment when she's basically confronting him about him using all these wishes to super? I mean, it was kind of almost that moment actually made me think, because they try to do the twist of it, right? Where she's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to the people. And I believe, I guess that's the high point there where he's about to have like all the power from the wishes or whatnot. But it made me think it was like a really bad version of the Dark Knight when Joker has two boats with bomb switches in each one and Batman believes in the people to make the right decision. But in this one, it almost felt like they didn't have to, because not only did the people, I guess, make the right decision, although I think there is some like talk about potentially some people didn't give up their wishes. But I felt like when Maxwell Lord gave up his wish, I would imagine that gives up everybody else's retroactively, except for maybe Cheetah's and Wonder Woman's. Right? Because if he was the wish that made everybody else's wish, and he undoes it, then doesn't it undo everybody else's?
Well, that guy didn't give up his coffee.
But, yeah, that was
cool. Yes, he did. He peed right at that moment. He was like, you're right.
He peed and pooped. It went right through him.
Yep. And the coffee's gone. But I was at the climax of that moment there. And then,
and it's a good climax, right? It's very rare that you see a superhero solve the problem without punching and without killing, right? Yeah. I totally thought, based on Max Lord and Wonder Woman's history from the comics, that she was going to have to kill him. I would have preferred that it be in front of his son.
Yeah.
No, really, because that's a much harder thing for Wonder Woman to do, is to save everybody by killing this guy in front of her, the son, and that sets up the son as a villain later on. But whatever. I'll accept it. It surprised me that she was able to get the lasso around his foot so she could talk to everybody on the planet, who, by the way, everybody on the planet speaks English. And even though earlier they showed that her lasso couldn't get to him because there was wind, and apparently the lasso could not get through wind earlier, but somehow it snaked itself over because fucking magic. It's a magic lasso. It can do anything. But what did you guys think of the climax? I know, Tom, you're a fan of climaxes. Can't hear you.
You're muted.
Yeah, we can't. You're muted, dude.
We're not just talking about your looks because of the glasses either.
Thanks. Of course, I am a big fan of climaxes. This one kind of left me kind of flat-footed. I do like it when a superhero can defeat the villain without using violence. That's always kind of a fun, you know, thing. And no, I didn't love this. Didn't love it. It left me. That's why I didn't get higher than the score I gave earlier. I think it was a 11 or 12.
11. It was 11.
It was just. Mm-hmm. It just kind of meh, and I didn't love it.
So I think what they could have done with the end, since she had shown Steve Trevor that the truth could be seen with the lasso, I think the ending could have been much more personal between him and the villain, showing him the truth of what he'd done and him renouncing his wish and everything basically going back, except for the wishes that were done before he did that hadn't been renounced. So Cheetah still could have been Cheetah. That dude still could have had his coffee. She had already renounced his wish, and it would have resolved everything else that had happened. And it would have been her showing him the truth of what he was, once again, without violence and without sort of the unexplained wind and communicating to the whole world versus via whatever that satellite system was.
Well, I think that's what happened, though. That's essentially what happened. He renounces his wish, and that's...
No, but then you see the whole world... then they go into this montage of people around the world renouncing the wishes after he does that, right?
I think also Patty Jenkins came out, or somebody associated with it came out and was like, yeah, no. Him undoing his wish didn't undo everybody else's. They're still... I think there was a statement made...
Then Batman's parents should be fucking alive, Seth.
Yeah, I guess
so. Right. Because Bruce Wayne would not renounce that wish.
Yeah. We don't know that, but Batman actually wished for his parents to stay dead. But what he did was he asked for that death to be repeated in every Batman movie. Everybody got that.
Explain my origin every time everyone's introduced to me.
Yeah, so
can I renounce that wish?
No, you can't. You have to watch it every time. Really? Every time you have to see the pearls break.
Man, those goddamn pearls.
Sons of bitches. All right.
So yeah, I liked, like, I'm a big fan of the storyline in the comics where she kills Max Lord. It is... especially because of the aftermath of it and how she has to basically battle back to, you know, be a part of the Justice League and you know, listen to Clark and Bruce pontificate about how we don't kill and blah, blah, blah. I'm glad they didn't do it here. I kind of thought they might, but again, I think it's a testament to the fact that it feels like Patty Jenkins was trying to make not only a Wonder Woman movie set in the 80s, but a Wonder Woman movie that could have been made in the 80s, for better or for worse. But getting back to that whole idea of Wonder Woman as a peacemaker, as somebody who does, you know, tout the ideas of truth and love.
So
I think you're right. It is a movie that was probably written in the 80s. I would agree.
So I think one of the problems that I had with the whole movie was Max Lord. And it's probably because I am so fucking sick of Donald Trump that I don't want to see him in my fucking Wonder Woman movie. I mean, essentially, that's all that Max Lord was, with the exception that he cared about his children.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Pedro Pascal did a great job. But I also think there's not anything that he's been in that I didn't like, at least him. And so, yeah, I think he did a good job, but I'm with you. I'm a little weary of the 80s slick businessman, greedy asshole trope.
And then,
I mean, it's
one
there,
of my biggest problems was that his, he didn't have like a white collar and a blue shirt with white cuffs. Because that screams 80s business guy to me. You really have to have that.
Oh, like the Gordon Gekko, like, yeah. Blue striped,
yeah,
shirt.
Gordon, yeah.
Gekko.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You missed that trope.
I actually did like that. Because typically that type of villain, that type of persona, I mean, you can look at it from old cartoons and stuff like that. It's always super evil, bad, terrible person. The slick back business guy. And to have a movie where there's a redemption for someone like that, who we typically, you know, it's always, oh, that dude's just a douche, which, I mean, I'm not saying that they aren't. I'm not saying that there, you know, aren't problems, especially with, you know, people like Trump and stuff like that. Like, but I think if you want to have a movie that's giving you hope that people like that can change, or like there can be hope for that, I think it's fun to live in that. I don't think it's completely, you know, just to believe the worst in everyone. So, or to solve the problem by just killing that, you know? So I don't know. I actually did like it, cause it's different. I think a lot of times, especially a lot of the superhero movies we watch, the typical way to deal with a villain is just to beat them, you know, to a pulp. And so, I'm not saying that no superhero movie has done the let's help rehabilitate the bad guy. But I don't know, this one, it really stuck out to me, and I thought that that is one of the things that really brought me around to pushing the 211 is actually that whole thing there.
Josh, what do you got?
I just wanted to say, not having been a big reader of Wonder Woman and Stacey having mentioned it, who is Max Lord in the comic?
So Max Lord was originally introduced in Justice League International. He was a businessman who figured, hey, I can make some money if I get a bunch of heroes working for the UN, and I'm going to figure a way to monetize it. Later on, you find out that Max Lord has some mind control power where he can push people into going in the direction he wants them, which is how he convinces the heroes to become members of the Justice League. But whenever he does, he gets a nosebleed. So they kind of play off that in this, where he convinces people what he wants them to do by pushing them a little bit. Later on, he goes from just a guy who's greedy to a downright out-and-out villain. And in a major Identity Crisis storyline, or one of the Crisis storylines, he's controlling Superman. And Wonder Woman has no choice but to snap Max Lord's neck, because nobody wants to fucking deal with a mind-controlled Superman. And that causes a rift amongst the Justice League where they're like, we don't kill. And Wonder Woman's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a fucking Amazon. I've killed plenty of people. And by the way, I just saved the world from a rogue Superman. So
yeah, I've been around since I've been around for a long time. I've killed a couple people.
Yeah. But going back to what Seth said about the redemption of Max Lord brings us finally to the last part of a movie, and that's the resolution. Sometimes you don't have it. Sometimes it just ends at the climax. The resolution guides the viewers with the emotion that you want them to leave with. So in Wonder Woman, it's her realizing that Steve has sacrificed himself, and then her feeling nostalgic about the loss of her old friends as they go back to modern times, right? Her looking at the watch, etc. In this movie, it's the redemption of Max Lord, who's guiding you in. So finally, you know, Max finds his son and realizes that's what's really important to him. It's not the wealth. It's not everything that he's been working for. That's kind of the resolution. And then they also have, of course, the scene where, you know, Wonder Woman meets her rape victim. But
they're meat cute.
Yeah. they're rape cute and then they're meat cute. I got it. So that's the resolution of it. I will say on many levels, there's a lot of shit in Wonder Woman 84 that doesn't make any fucking sense to me whatsoever. And I think that's one of the things that why I don't like the movie is he goes to a top secret island and then somehow finds his way back into the middle of Washington, D.C. and his son emerges from a forest. To have that magical moment.
As one does.
My wife and I were watching the movie, and I hear her say under her breath, for fuck's sake. Because she was even like, I'm not swallowing this bullshit. But what did you guys think about the resolution? Apparently, there are no consequences to almost causing the end of the world. None of the villains get their comeuppance in this movie.
Well, there aren't in the real world.
Well, the story, you know, we're shooting for redemption.
That's not what the theme of this movie is, though.
That was the last movie.
None of the bad guys suffer anything from their actions in this movie.
Well, they have to sit on their beds and think about what they did.
Yeah,
wait a minute. That guy has...
About her actions about raping that guy.
It's true.
The guy with the coffee, he has a burned roof of his mouth.
Yeah. That skin is peeling.
He's not one of the villains, though.
Yeah, how do we know?
Definitely has to at least romance the gay guy.
I would ask this. If, like, most times we correct somebody, put them in prison because they do something that cannot be, like, for instance, you murder somebody. You can't just bring them back to life. You go to jail for that, right? But if you're able to actually correct every bad thing you did by unwishing it, do you still punish the person? If you're actually able to correct everything that you did so that nothing bad happened.
Well, I mean, let's face it. The guy, the victim, the rape victim is probably going to get arrested by the Secret Service for assaulting a bunch of Secret Service officers.
Remember if that's a thing that they address, like, do the people
they remember
wished things
remember.
They yeah. remember
do they, so they remember
the wall remember the wall fell in Egypt, right, and the water came back and people were like trying to rescue people and hydrate themselves. So there were real physical consequences to what happened.
No, there were, but I'm saying,
everything was undone.
Max Lord, is it enough for Max Lord to remember all of the things that he did?
Because the president didn't remember. The president, he didn't remember. He didn't remember some of the stuff he did. He was like, I was just over here and I was over there. he seemed like he was a little confused about all the things when he was doing things because of the wishes.
Yeah,
because
he's Ronald Reagan. He has no idea what's going on anyways. He's got Alzheimer's.
I had a handful of jelly beans in his hand in his pants.
True. But all I'm saying is we were shown somebody was not sure what was going on. I'm just going off of the cues the movie's giving me. My assumption watching was that people didn't some of these wishes, especially when it involved like other people and stuff, I don't know if they fully knew what it was they were doing. They were just compelled to do it. So I don't know. It is very confusing.
Yeah. But there, looks like there was still a physical impact to the world.
Right. I don't know. I thought I remember things like reverting back whenever he renounced the wish. Like things went back.
If everything before, went back, like the Superman movie where he travels back in time, then but that's not what we saw, right?
We still see chaos at the end, like there's debris and DC's freaking destroyed, right, when he goes to find his kid.
Which, if you could have just shown Lex Luthor somewhere in there, you would understand his whole motivation for every film later on. Like, these fucking superpower people almost killed everybody in the 80s. Why doesn't anybody remember this?
A trash pickup crew in DC, and that's just the way DC was in the 80s. Like, wait, I don't know.
That's kind of accurate.
Mary and Barry.
It's embarrassing. It's fucking embarrassing.
All right, so now that we have broken down Wonder Woman, any final thoughts on Wonder Woman 84?
I'm notching it down to a 6. After our discussion.
Yeah, I think I'm down to an 11.
I'm pulling the lever, Mike. I'm notching her down to a 6.
So my final thought is they've announced that there's going to be a third one, and if Dr. Psycho isn't in it, I'm going to be upset.
And if Peter Dinklage isn't Dr. Psycho, we go to war.
I think that the third Wonder Woman movie will be that Wonder Woman is pregnant with the rape victim's baby. And we have to deal with the resolution of that.
That's a tough break. Hey, Bill?
We just call him victim number one. That's fine.
Hey, victim number one?
We call him plaintiff.
What do you think about a superpowered baby that can bench press you? What's your thoughts on that?
So Wonder Woman changes her last name to Cosby. What, too soon?
Yep.
All right, let me ask you one more question about this, because I'm with Josh. I'm dropping it down to a 6 because I just thought of this. Wonder Woman is the most iconic feminist hero. In comicdom, is that a fair assessment?
I think so.
Yeah.
She graced the cover of Ms. Magazine at least twice.
One of the shittiest things about the Silver Age is the whole thing. Wonder Woman's whole motivation was always pining over Steve Trevor. Right? When she gets a chance to wish for something, rather than wishing to be back on Themyscira or to be able to see her mother or everybody that she grew up with, she wishes to see a guy that she knew for a week.
Yeah, I was about to say world peace.
The whole reason she's here.
I guess Dick was that good, man.
But, you know, it was a wish of the heart.
It was like a lollipop.
You're not a very good romantic. It wasn't. Like, she had the wish stone in her hand, and she wasn't saying it out loud. It was just the wish that was in her heart. I'm sad. I kind of wish my boyfriend was here. Mm-hmm. I mean, who hasn't wished stupid stuff like that when there were no real consequences? She didn't think there was a consequence. She didn't know the stone worked at that point.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Okay. Thank you. She just had this little wish in her heart. I kind of wish my boyfriend was back. I miss Steve. That is nothing to crucify anyone over.
That's true.
And I think it's a couple of things. I think it's a wish of the heart. I agree. You know, I really like the end of Volume 1 of Wonder Woman during, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths when she and Steve get married. I think it's a very cool thing. I'm glad they didn't carry it into the George Perez stuff, but, you know, that's a whole other podcast. but I think the other thing is that Steve was the one person that she hadn't been able to save. You know, going back to the whole sacrifice thing, but the one person that she wanted to be able to rescue and be a champion for was the one guy she couldn't. And I think it was a lot of, you know, the romantic in me says that it was because she loves him, but I think it was also because she sees that as maybe her greatest failure.
So do you think he comes back in the third movie? Do you think there's another fucking magic thing that allows another guy to get raped?
No, I don't. I think there will have been enough criticism in this podcast alone, if Patty Jenkins is listening, that that she...
I volunteer as tribute.
I don't think he'll come back to it. I don't think it's ground they need to tread again.
Yeah, she never thought.
She get volunteers for that. Like, oh, Steve Trevor's going to take over my body and have all control of my consciousness, but my body has sex with Wonder Woman. I volunteer as tribute. I'm good.
I honestly never thought I would use the word rape more in a podcast about a Wonder Woman movie than I did about an Alan Moore graphic novel. It's ridiculous.
Wait till they make the Killing Joke movie. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
She complimented the guy's outfit. All is forgiven.
All forgiven.
It's all forgiven.
And he doesn't remember it, so that makes it okay.
Yeah.
It does make it okay.
Yeah. Because roofies make everything better. What?
It does.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's
and
just
legal.
Saying it out loud made me.
Yeah. I need to take a shower in front of Mike's wife now.
Yeah, I mean, it. You know, it's not one of those things, and I just mean in general, this movie is not one of those things that ruins Wonder Woman for me. There's been a lot of Wonder Woman comics that should have ruined Wonder Woman for me years and years ago. I still love her. I still love all of the things that I love about Wonder Woman. I think they did a good job with some of it. A lot of it wasn't great. So I'm cautiously optimistic for the third movie. And just please don't involve Geoff Johns again.
Did I fall asleep when we talked about how bad the CGI was?
Oh, no, we did not even discuss
that
it went from day to night to day again because it had to be nighttime for that shitty CGI.
Sure. Question. If Steve Trevor would have possessed a 12-year-old boy, would she still only see Steve Trevor?
Super hot.
Ew.
Yeah. Yes. It changes.
Well, here's the thing. She didn't see Steve Trevor when the Steve Trevor in the other body first approached her. He said Diana to her like four times, I don't know you. It was only until she realized it was Steve Trevor that she realized it was Steve Trevor. The 12-year-old boy might have had a harder time convincing her.
Unless
see,
it was that, Tom Hanks.
But see, that scenario I just gave you is that Nicole Kidman movie. What's that movie called? Where her husband possesses the young boy who comes back from the dead?
Oh, yeah. Back Again or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. See?
I blissfully have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a very strange movie.
It might have been Karma.
That was her just sleeping with a student.
I know. I know, but that's what came to mind first. I knew that wasn't right.
That was a weird reincarnation movie with rape implications, and it was very bad.
So,
if you're going to watch a reincarnation movie, watch Shelley Long's Hello Again. It's a lot.
Oh, I love that. Shelley, that's a good
one.
I
don't think there's any rape in that one at all.
Well, I guess I'm not going to waste my time with that then. So, critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a 61% fresh. And I will say, it is hard to find a movie where either you love this movie or you hate this movie, but that is where this movie is landing on the reviews. Either you're like, yeah, that was a great movie, and I've been prisoner of my house for so long that I will think anything that is new is good, or you watched it with a critical eye like we did. But let's go now to last thoughts and your final rating, because some of us have changed our minds on our 3 to 18. Let's start with Josh, because you already told us what your new score was. Or did it drop or come up again?
It's never going to come up again. Yeah, I think through our discussions, I see even some more of the cracks in the creases here. And I'm going to go from a 7 to a 6. The one thing I will give this movie is that it could possibly be used as a hopeful bridge to the third movie. If they sort of get back to the spirit of the first movie and maybe use this just as some sort of referential idea to correct the wrongs of the past and move forward, I can see this helping the franchise in a sort of a launchpad sort of way. But other than that, I can't really I don't really have a lot of heart or warmth for this film, unfortunately.
LT, what do you got?
So I think I'm going to go with my initial reaction after I saw this film, which was I wish that it had been before Christmas when I was still anticipating a good film to come out for Wonder Woman. And then my thought after that was I wish they had made a better film than what they made. And then my final thought after that was I wish they would stop making films about wishes. And I still rated an 8.
All right. Seth, what do you got?
I'm thinking because of this podcast and talking about this movie, I got to see how handsome Tom is with those glasses on. So this goes up to a 12.
Oh. And
good man.
Yeah. Did you know what, Tom? If you just take your goddamn glasses off, your OnlyFans shoot through the roof. There you go, you handsome son of a bitch.
Silver fox.
Now let your hair down. Shake it.
Otherwise.
Old son of a bitch, Mike.
That joke extends to every single person on this podcast besides Stacy.
Stacy, speaking of Stacy, what do you got for us? What's your final rating and final thoughts?
Oh, okay. I'm going to knock it down to a 13. My final thoughts are, I can see myself revisiting certain aspects of this movie, but all in all, I don't know if you've got, I mean, I don't know if we've talked about this, but I love the Supergirl movie with Helen Slater. I know how terrible it is. I know it's bad. I think I would rather sit through that because of the love I have for it before I would sit through all 2 hours and 39 minutes of Wonder Woman 84.
All right. And Tom?
I'm sticking with my 11. I thought it over pretty well. You guys made some great points. It is way more rapey than I initially thought. We talked about that in the last podcast. And I really wish they'd gone with a Felix Faust as the bad guy on this one, because it just seemed like it fits so much better. And I hated the CGI on the cheat at the end. But, you know, I paid my money. I enjoyed a lot of the fight scenes. The colors and the 80s brought me right back. It really captured the feel of the 80s. And at the end of that movie, I kind of had a good time, so I got to give it an 11.
All right. Well, I will say that it is the fourth best superhero movie that I saw this past year. The first being Old Guard, second being Bloodshot, the third being
oh my God,
Harley Quinn's Emancipation. It's only because I didn't see The New Mutants, so I don't know where that would rank. yeah. Actually, you know what? I like this better than The Birds of Prey. So
I don't know. That's
really
amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. I
love
was
Birds of Prey.
It's a good sandwich.
Yeah.
That was this year?
Yeah, it seems like so long ago. But I will stick to my rating. I was actually originally going to drop it, but you know what? After talking to you guys, I did not see, like, I was looking at it from a story structure point of view, and you guys have convinced me that even though I couldn't definitely see what was there and I had a general idea, you confirmed my hypothesis that the most of the plot elements that are supposed to be there were there. So I'm not going to drop it any more in the ratings. However, I will give credit to KatyaRomer.com, because when I was trying to, after I worked out all the plot points, I tried to look for somebody else who had also worked out the plot points. And surprisingly, this one random blogger and I had almost the same beats. And I was like, wow, that confirms that this is a really well-made movie. And the fact that most of us agreed on what the beats were in this movie, saves it for me. I shouldn't be as harsh on it as, I initially was.
Just because you hit the beats doesn't make it a good song, buddy.
I agree, but, I thought it was a wreck from a storytelling point of view, but it's not. It's still a wreck.
That doesn't do anything for me. Just because you hit the technical doesn't mean it makes it any better of a movie. I don't follow that logic.
My logic was I thought the filmmakers had failed in doing the basic work that they needed to, but apparently they did do the very bare basics. And I think a lot of the problems that there were reshoots. And yeah, it looks like there were three different hands in writing this movie. So I think that plays a part in it. Usually when I think it was probably Patty Jenkins and Jeff Johns who were the original screenwriters when they sat down to write it. And then they brought in Dave Callahan to fix the problems. But I don't think everything got fixed. And I think I see what they were going for, and I can understand why people like the movie. It's just I'm too big a Wonder Woman fan to like it, unfortunately.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
And with that, I think we should probably go to plugs because we've been rambling on a lot.
Rambling on!
Now, Stacey, you were showing us the Wonder Woman toy that you have. Where can people go to see your awesome toys?
They can go to my Instagram. It is at Geeky Vixen, all one word. Yeah, so I take lots of pictures of the toys that I feature on the show and just toys in general and sprinkled in a few selfies and pictures of my dog.
Awesome.
Cute dog.
Seth, where can people hear you if they can't get enough of your smooth, silky voice?
That's it, man.
Oh, and by the way, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, man. Happy birthday, man.
Happy birthday, Seth.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Who's Next Podcast? Go ahead and check it out. Who'snextgaming.com. You can find all the stuff I'm doing over there. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else have any plugs other than Kirby Crackle, who provides our geek rock music every week? You can check them out at KirbyCracklemusic.com.
I'd like to plug GeekOrthodox.com.
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 Hello, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things such as stained glass prints, Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses, socks, baseball hats, you name it, they got it. Whatever you need that's geeky, you can find it at GeekOrthodox.com.
I am wearing one of their shirts right now, a sweatshirt called Blessed Are the Geeks. True Bastards?
Yeah.
Nice. What's that from, Josh?
It's actually from a series of books called The Grey Bastards. The author is a friend of Ian and Tammy. They're a great series of very fun fantasy novel about a group of half-orcs stuck between the world of men and True Blood orcs, riding their hogs into battle. It's good.
I want to read this. What's it called again?
It's called The Grey Bastards. I just picked it up. I picked it up because Ian makes like 3 t-shirts for the series, and I'm like, what is this? And then I just, honestly, I owned the shirts before I bought the book.
Well, hopefully I can get it on my iPad because I got old man eyes.
Yeah.
Tom, you got anything to plug?
Pentagon is still coming up, guys. I know we're all not going to be traveling down there. I might travel down there. A lot of people are shaking their heads. No, no one wants to join me in the plague zone that is Pensacola, Florida.
I canceled the Airbnb, so you gotta
don't worry. It'll be easy getting a hotel room.
Let's just turn it into a hospital bed.
Diane has offered to put me up in the spare bedroom. So I still have this hope that we can get down there, that the flights will be going and it won't be a death sentence.
No way.
So yeah,
there's definitely no way.
Maybe the royal way, but not the actual way.
Not the royal way, but not this way.
All right. Hey, I also want to plug something new. The Cannonball Run. This year, I'll be doing the Cannonball Run from Maine all the way to Eureka, California. You can follow us online on Cannonball Run, CannonballScooterRun.com. You can follow the racer's progress. It is an actual race. It is all the way across the United States, and wish me luck, guys. I am number 112.
Cool.
Nice.
Any other final plugs?
In my butt.
Now, speaking of in your butt, Tom.
Tom's all paid.
What is it you? No, we're not sending anybody there. We can't do that to our fan.
Tony's a subscriber. He's actually my number one paid subscription.
Oh my God, let's talk about that.
Thanks,
Tony.
Josh, Pensacola, Florida. Is that your sector?
It's not going to be my sector this year.
Stacy, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like sitting at the cool kids table.
Yeah, it is. LT, any words of wisdom for us?
If you've got only one wish, why not wish for a world peace?
Oh, see, I thought you were going to wish for Mitch McConnell to lose. That's
he did.
This is going to
exactly
be
exactly what he just said.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
World
I'm sorry.
Peace. World peace. Why not wish for world peas?
World peas are delicious in potatoes.
Seth, any final thoughts for us?
Wear your mask.
Yeah, don't be a dumbass. Wear a mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, I appreciate everybody listening to this podcast. If you're listening to it on YouTube, we actually do have a podcast where we talk about comic books every week. You can check us out anywhere you get your podcasts, including Podbean, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or iTunes, or whatever it's called now. We're all over the place. Google Play. Yeah. And if you're listening to the podcast, we have a YouTube channel. You can find it by searching for The Long Box Guys, where we post videos. Some of them even go into the history of comics over there, too. And we have some secret origins over there as well. Ooh. Tom, what is it that you always say?
Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. And Mikey, my good friend, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like drunk history, but for comics.
Those are great words of wisdom, my friend. And with that, aloha from the Long Box Guys. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode.
Whoa, Whoa, you gotta wait for LT to get ready to record and then give him the signal. LT, fucking stop that recording.
No signal.
God damn it, LT. I told you to wait for the signal.
He went.
Stop recording.
What's going on?
You gotta wait for the signal.
Oh, for fuck's sake, LT.
It's signal time.
All right, fine.
Hold on.
Oh, he stopped.
He stopped. I don't know. Are you?
Did you just send me that video?
Dude,
fuck it. That's this week's podcast.
God damn it, Tom. You come up with a signal right now and LT, fucking follow it.
LT, did your mom have any children that lived? Fuck. Are you ready?
He's talking to
I'm
you,
ready.
LT.
You ready?
Signal! We're going Wayne's World! Are you ready?
We're going!
5, 4 Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box.
He's not recording!
Why is he recording?
Why aren't you recording?
Just go.
Why are you recording?
Now you gotta stop again.
No.
Don't stop ever again.
Just keep it so we can shame you.
Are you ready?
Stop fucking sending me the videos.
I'm ready.